Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Senate Finance. It's Tuesday, February 25th, at about 5 minutes after 5. We have a number of people before us to talk to us about SB 138. And we'll get to that in a moment. Members present are Senator Meyer, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, Senator Fairclough, and myself, Senator Kelly. And gentlemen, I'd kind of like to know why this is a good business decision. If you could kind of couch your remarks in those terms. I'm sure you have a kind of a scheduled presentation. I want you to go ahead and give that, but I'd like you to talk to this committee about why this is good business. You should know, given your experiences. And Dan, good to see you. You know a lot about business. So I'd kind of like to talk about that as you give the presentation. So feel free, and if we could start with Mr. McMahon on the left, and we'll just kind of go around and finish up with Mr. Palmer. Ms. Palmer at the end there. And you have the floor. And
okay.
Go right ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Bill McMahon. I'm a senior commercial advisor and have more than 30 years' experience with ExxonMobil. I thank you for the opportunity to be here today and to share ExxonMobil's views around the Alaska LNG Project Heads of Agreement, as well as Senate Bill 138. In my 30 years with ExxonMobil, I've had a wide variety of jobs. They've been very exciting and challenging. And for the past 20 years, I've been involved with trying to commercialize Alaska natural gas. And I would say that the last 6 months have been especially rewarding for me as we've made our recent progress. I guess to give a little bit of background, I first got involved with Alaska gas back in the early 90s as we were looking at an LNG project to the Far East. So everything old is new again.
Can I stop you just for a second? It's probably important for the record and for the people viewing at home that might tune into this that you all represent the signatories of the agreement, and that's why you're here.
So, that's correct.
Go ahead.
Okay. In the early 1990s, we were looking at a LNG project to the Far East, and as we analyzed that project, the cost to get the LNG to the Far East was high compared to our competitors, and so we moved on to our next effort. In the late 90s, ExxonMobil was involved with considering a gas-to-liquids project where we would take the natural gas on the North Slope, put it through a chemical process, and turn it into a liquid that we would hope to move down the Trans-Alaska pipeline. We found that project had a couple of challenges to it. First of all, to build that big of a plant in a remote location was very costly, and the value of natural gas began to rise by the end of that decade, closing a bit of the spread between liquids and natural gas. And so in the year 2000, our attention turned to building a pipeline to Alberta and to access the North American markets. Fast forward a bit, in 2009, we partnered with TransCanada to form the Alaska Pipeline Project, APP, and there we were pursuing building a pipeline to Alberta under the AGEA framework. And unfortunately, changes in the North American market made building that project impractical, as our competitors had success on exploiting unconventional gas. The North American market became saturated with that gas and made it difficult for us to consider building that pipeline to Alberta. So then Governor Parnell invited the three producers as well as TransCanada to join together and consider an LNG project to the Far East. And at the time, we saw the merit of that, and ExxonMobil willingly participated in that. And so we've made good progress with Alaska LNG. We've reached consensus on selecting a concept. We've selected a preferred location for the LNG plant down in Nikiski. and we've advanced our field work. And so a bit of a story about how we got here today and why we think LNG is the right answer, why it is good business for Alaska Natural Gas. So for the past 6 months, I've been working with the gentleman sitting here at the table, and as well as with folks from the Department of Natural Resources and Revenue, and we've come up with this heads-of agreement. It's quite a milestone for the project because it lays out the principles and the roadmap under which all the parties represented believe that we can move forward and make this project a success. And today you're considering legislation that's based on the accomplishments of that Heads of Agreement, or HOA. So from the outset, I would like to say that ExxonMobil supports Senate Bill 138, and we appreciate Governor Parnell and his administration for all their hard work in introducing the legislation that's consistent with the principles in the Heads of Agreement. ExxonMobil is committed to pursuing commercialization of Alaska natural gas, and we're committed to be part of the Alaska LNG project. Senate Bill 138 would allow the three producers, Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, as well as TransCanada, to work together to progress the project and develop a fiscal and project framework that's essential for advancing the project to completion. Senate Bill 138 authorizes three things that are critical to the success of the project: participation, percentage, and process. We call those our three P's. So let me delve into those. Participation. Senate Bill 138 would authorize the state of Alaska to participate in the project. And by doing that, they would increase the alignment of the actors in the project to improve chances of success. The second P is percentage. The legislation would establish what percentage of the natural gas the state of Alaska would take. And of course, that's a combination of royalty gas as well as a gross production tax on the gas. And then the final P is process. And we believe that the legislation provides a robust process that would allow us to develop project-enabling contracts. And if consensus can be reached on these contracts, they would come back before the legislature for approval. So if Senate Bill 138 is enacted, ExxonMobil is ready to move into pre-FEED. I'd like to take a moment and just describe what pre-FEED is. We throw that word around, but it stands for Preliminary Front-End Engineering and Design. And that's just a phase of project development that takes a project from its concept and moves it forward. Now, the concept that we've landed on as a group is to build a gas treating plant on the North Slope to remove impurities from the gas, build a pipeline across the state of Alaska down to the Nikiski area, and there build an LNG plant to take gaseous natural gas and liquefy it. So in pre-FEED, we would take that concept and we'd do additional engineering and design so that we could have the information necessary to file the permits to be able to construct the project. It's important to do this engineering because we need to know the environmental impacts of the project so that we can complete the federal permit applications that are necessary. So you might ask, what work would be done during pre-FEED? And just some examples, you know, we'd want to determine the diameter of the pipeline. That diameter would determine how big of a corridor do we need? What kind of impact will we have on the environment as we're building this pipeline across the state? What kind of compressors and other equipment are we going to use to treat the gas and to liquefy the gas? What kind of air emissions and water emissions would those pieces of equipment have? Where are we going to put our marine terminal? And how will our LNG carriers interact with the wildlife in Cook Inlet? That's just an example of some of the things that we need to do to be able to file our permits. Of course, pre-FEED will also give us a better cost estimate and a better schedule estimate so that we can better assess the commercial viability of the project. And of course, with state participation, the state will be right there and have the same information that we will have whenever we make that next big decision, which would be to go into FEED. So finally, the answers to these questions and questions like those are critical to moving forward. And so entering pre-FEED is a necessary step, it's a critical step, and it's a step that we have never taken before on a gas commercialization project. So in closing, as I said earlier, if Senate Bill 138 is enacted, ExxonMobil is ready to move into pre-FEED. We're encouraged by the legislature's prompt intention to Senate Bill 138, and we look forward to working with the legislation, with the legislature as well as the administration, as the bill moves forward towards passage. So again, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I thank you for the opportunity to share our thoughts today, and we'd be happy to address any questions you have.
Thank you, Billy. You wanted to answer questions now, you said, until later? Okay. Senator Dunleavy.
Through you, Chair. Thank you very much. It's a question that's, I guess, been on my mind for some time. You alluded to it. The GTL concept, obviously you've determined it's not profitable to do it. It was my understanding that if, you know, it's the profitability comes when there's a spread between the oil price and gas. And the spread has never been greater, I don't think, at this time. And you alluded to the large, complex, and a huge cost behind building a plant on the slope. Can you just give me a curiosity thing, and I don't want to take too much time, but why isn't that not, why is that concept off the table? Why would that not be profitable, given that you could potentially pig that stuff down the existing pipeline? Just curious.
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair. Thank you for asking that, because these are the kind of questions we ask ourselves all the time. Are we actually pursuing the commercialization concept that makes the most economic sense? And so, as you've indicated, a gas to liquids plant of this of the size necessary to convert this amount of gas would be massive. And it would be a logistical challenge to build that on the North Slope. Also, the process for converting gas to liquids consumes a very large amount of the gas. About a third of the gas is consumed in the process. And of course, you know enough that the product that comes out of this is a very high quality product. You can make sulfur-free diesel. You can make blending stocks for motor oil and very high-quality products. And so if you're going to ship those down taps, you would need to modify taps to be able to keep them separate. And you mentioned the idea of having pigs to run those devices through the pipeline to batch it to keep it separate from the crude oil. But in 2011, when we considered joining in on the LNG study, ExxonMobil reassessed gas to liquids, and at that time, it was our feeling that an LNG project was still a superior value for the gas.
I'm going to ask that we hold our questions because we have some members that are going to have to leave to an LBNA meeting. So, and I really want to hear the narrative you all can put together here. So, go ahead. Are you finished, Bill and Dave? You want to go ahead?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dave Van Tile, and I'm the regional manager with BP here in Alaska. I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to offer some brief comments on the heads of agreement from BP's perspective, a bit on SB 138, and also a bit of context around how BP came to be in this place before you here today. I've been working in Alaska for BP for almost 30 years, and for more than half of that time, I've been working to get Alaska's gas to market in a variety of different ways, starting with a previous LNG effort in the late 90s, then as part of the Alaska Gas Producers Pipeline team that my colleague mentioned, Bill, in 2000 to 2002, then with the Stranded Gas Act effort in AGEA, and then from 2008 to 2011 as a member of the Management Committee for the Denali gas pipeline effort. And now today in my current role on the fiscal team, who worked with the administration and the members here in developing the heads of agreement, and I'm also sit on the Management Committee of the Alaska LNG project, working with all the parties here. Starting with the heads of agreement, executing that heads of agreement was a really important step for BP. And my boss is Janet Weiss, and she's the president of BP here in Alaska, and she was very pleased to be able to sign that HOA because of what the HOA means. It's an aligned way forward to get Alaska's gas to market, and it's the way forward that we think has the best chance of success. Now, importantly, as you know, there's signatures of six other parties in that HOA, along with Janet's. You know, one for each of the entities represented here before you, along with the commissioners of the Department of Revenue and Department of Natural Resources. All of us are aligned on the roadmap that's outlined in the HOA that provides a way forward for the legislature to consider and enact enabling legislation that would advance the Alaska LNG project. And that's one of the things that's really pretty exciting, that aligned way forward. Now, as you know, these parties in front of you haven't always been aligned. Now, BP was involved from 2000 to 2006, working with the other major producers on various ways to get a gas pipeline built. TransCanada, meanwhile, pursued their own efforts independently. And some of you will remember that during 2007 and 2008, BP testified robustly about AGEA. We wanted to be involved in building the gas pipeline, but we had some real concerns with AGEA. And after the license was awarded to TransCanada, we still wanted to commercialize our North Slope gas, and so we ended up partnering with ConocoPhillips on the Denali project in 2008. When the Denali open season that occurred in late 2010 failed to garner enough interest to warrant continuing the investment in the project, we shut it down the following year. But we didn't stop looking for ways to commercialize Alaska gas. Following the Point Thompson settlement, internally we came to the conclusion that the best way forward was to combine our efforts with all the relevant parties, just as the governor had suggested in late 2011. Within BP, we agreed it was time to stop fighting yesterday's battle. It was time to find a way to work together on a new project. And that's what the HOA represents to BP. And that's why we're excited about it. So BP believes the heads of agreement is critical to successfully advancing the Alaska LNG project. And therefore, for us, the key question for examining SB 138 is pretty simple. Is SB 138 faithful to the heads of agreement? And for us, for BP, the answer is yes. SB 138 does move all the parties forward together as envisioned in the heads of agreement. As my colleague, Mr. McMahon, mentioned, the three central elements for us include enabling the unprecedented commercial alignment, which is possible with state participation through AGDC, and the bill also authorizes the state to negotiate contracts. And the bill establishes a percentage for taxes gas that, when added to the state's royalty and kind share, puts the state at the table in the project with a participation in the range of 20 to 25% as outlined in the HOA. And finally, the bill lays out a process for negotiations to occur. And very importantly, it provides transparency through access by the legislature, and BP believes that really is the winning way, because the ultimate solution needs to work for everybody. Now, while we're generally pleased with SB 138, there's a couple of areas that are of interest to BP on the way the bill's been drafted that maybe could be improved just a bit. And one area that I'll highlight is ensuring that the newly formed subsidiary of AGDC is established in an efficient manner. Now, BP has certainly formed subsidiaries in the past, and we're familiar with the due diligence that's required by tax, legal, finance professionals, and the like. And it's effort well spent. But we also want to make sure that the new subsidiary is formed in a timely manner so that pre-FEED can start ramping up once the bill is enacted. That efficiency would include clearly defining authorities and empowering the new subsidiary to efficiently carry out its role, as well as allowing for appropriate sharing of staff between the new subsidiary and the AGDC parent. If you look at successful LNG projects around the world that involve host governments, the importance of having a well-resourced, independent host government commercial entity really makes those projects work, and we think AGDC can provide just that. Now, Mr. Chairman, you asked me to address at the outset, why does BP think this is good business, this Alaska LNG project? In a nutshell, BP believes that Alaska LNG can compete in the world market. Now, there's a lot of work we have to do to be able to confirm whether indeed that's true, that Alaska LNG can compete. We'll learn about that as we advance the project through pre-FEED and FEED and get more definition on cost estimates. But we believe that Alaska LNG can be delivered in a competitive manner. One of the things that's really important to the success of the project is alignment. We see that through the heads of agreement with the signatures of the parties here and the state. That tells us, it tells the marketplace, that this project has host government support. And that's very important, especially when you start talking to the marketplace about entering into long-term sales and purchase agreements. Talk about financing the project. If we have a competitive cost of supply, which we believe today that the project can, again, we have to do more work, sharpen our pencils, and go through pre-FEED and FEED. But if we do, we believe the project can generate long-term cash. That's what LNG projects do. Successful ones, they'll generate long-term cash for decades. Typically, LNG projects have a long plateau period measured in 20 years or more. And that's one thing that's of great interest to BP. It becomes a source of cash for the investors in the project and for the state of Alaska, which I think would be important to Alaskans as well, having some certainty of long-term cash generation well into the future. So in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, BP supports SB 138, and we look forward to continuing to work with the committee as the bill is reviewed and as questions about the bill or BP's interest in the project might arise. So thank you for the opportunity to comment here this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Vantile. Pat, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Pat Flood. I supervise the North Slope Gas Development team for ConocoPhillips in Anchorage. I've worked in the oil and gas industry for over 30 years with ConocoPhillips and its heritage companies. Okay. My entire career in the oil and gas industry has been devoted to safe and economic development of Alaska's oil and gas resources. I've been a resident of Alaska since 1983, so for over 30 years. ConocoPhillips appreciates this opportunity to testify today and regarding the heads of agreement and also in support of the Resources Committee substitute for SB 138. And as you pointed out, we are all signatories at this table to the heads of agreement and along with the Commissioners of the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Revenue. Sure. Overall, ConocoPhillips, as our compatriots have said, believes that there are several key areas that need to be addressed in order to advance the project, and those are outlined in the heads of agreement. And so first, the state has to decide that it wants to participate in the project. The legislature needs to define a production tax share that would be taken as gas molecules, which, along with the existing state royalty,
also taken as gas molecules defines that state overall gas share. And that supports the state equity percentage in the project and, as I said before, the state participation in the project. And then finally, the legislature needs to give the administration the tools to work through the arrangements, contracts required to move the project ahead with the consultation and ultimate ratification by the legislature, as all of that is outlined in the heads of agreement. We recognize that state participation and the state share is a significant policy decision for the legislature, and we welcome that legislative input as an absolutely necessary step to continue advancing the project. And so once again, you've asked us also to provide some background on how we got where we are today. And I'll add to a little bit of what's been said by ExxonMobil and BP. Phillips, one of the ConocoPhillips heritage companies, pioneered the LNG business in Cook Inlet and to Asia, both in terms of the technology and the markets. That's something we did in the 1960s. ConocoPhillips has been in the LNG business in Alaska since the 1960s. At the same time, Phillips and other ConocoPhillips heritage companies were beginning steps to develop the Alaska North Slope. And as most of you are aware, since the beginning of production from Prudhoe Bay, the Prudhoe Bay producers have been looking at options to bring the Alaska North Slope gas to market over 30 years. Among the ideas that have been considered at various times are LNG, pipelines to North America, and gas to liquids, or GTL, which these gentlemen have talked about. So at the end of our most recent effort to commercialize ANS gas with a pipeline to connect with the lower 48 markets, the Denali project, which we did with BP, we determined that the supply situation in those markets didn't support the project any longer. The international LNG market, one that we know, however, has remained stronger than the North American gas market. So at the urging of the governor, ConocoPhillips, along with some of those here at the table, and the state of Alaska are now working to take the next steps to the large-scale LNG project. Doing that, we're building on more than $500 million in work since 2000 in efforts to commercialize ANS gas. And the working relationship you see here today between the state, AGDC, ourselves, BP, ExxonMobil, and TransCanada is absolutely historic in that these parties are more aligned than they've ever been before. And with that alignment, we negotiated and agreed to the Heads of Agreement, or HOA, which provides, as these gentlemen said, the roadmap to moving the project forward. So one of the key steps in the Heads of Agreement is enabling legislation that addresses the three points that I mentioned earlier: state participation, state share in the project, and paying royalty and production taxes in gas. And the proposed legislation, the Resources Committee substitute for SB 138, as general law, effectively addresses these three key areas and is the first step in following the HOA roadmap. But in order for the state to effectively participate in the project, it needs a vehicle to represent and manage the state's interests. And the bill then places AGDC in this role with regards to the state participation in an LNG project. LNG supports, or ConocoPhillips supports, this provision of the legislation. Also, the bill, in changes to Title 38, grants the DNR commissioner flexibility with respect to negotiating royalty in oil and gas leases to provide gas that could be committed to a North Slope gas project, as well as other agreements are required for the state to participate. And the commissioners of both DNR and DOR need to be able to negotiate confidentially the details of many of these agreements in a way that doesn't compromise commercial positions of either the state or private parties. We believe the commissioners need this authority in order for the state to effectively participate in a project like the Alaska LNG project. Finally, the bill deals with the tax statutes in Title 43. This sets the production tax at 10.5% with the ability of the state to take their gas as gas molecules, or rather their tax as gas molecules. So effectively then, this tax rate, as these gentlemen have said, combined with the existing royalty percentage, sets the state's gas share for participation in the North Slope Natural Gas Project. So ConocoPhillips supports these provisions as they allow for a fixed gross production tax payable in gas, and the 10.5% rate that the administration has proposed in the bill yields a combined royalty plus production tax in the range of the 20 to 25% that we've agreed in the heads of agreement. So overall, ConocoPhillips supports the current version of the legislation, recognizing that it does contain significant policy decisions that the legislature needs to make when thinking about the state's role in a North Slope natural gas project, including the LNG project that we've all contemplated in the heads of agreement. If we can help by providing additional information or perspectives, we're happy to do so. And Mr. Chairman, I thank you for the opportunity to testify. And so in response to your original question, why is this a good business from ConocoPhillips' perspective? This is a business we understand. We've been in this business in Alaska since the 1960s. We understand the markets, and we understand what this project would take to be built. And as the gentleman from British Petroleum said, or BP said, we think we've got a really good shot at this project. We think this project can be competitive as we understand the market and as we understand the project. And it's time to take the next step to move into the pre-FEED phase and find out whether that's true or not.
Thank you. Mr. Flood.
Good evening. My name is Dan Fowski, and I am president of the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. And I would like to just preface my comments with what a pleasure it's been in reference to working with this group. We've come a long ways from a handful of us in the Sunshine Plaza Mall downtown trying to figure out if the state could do an in-state gas pipeline. To having an ongoing staff, I want to compliment the legislature for the legislation passed last year that enabled us to be sitting at this table with these companies, with our confidentiality agreements and the level of professionals we were able to hire, because we now have an absolute position at the table. AGDC is owned by the state and has made great progress on its own project, which has led to some pretty good discussions with my colleagues here around the table as we continue to kind of plug along. I absolutely support the bill and the concept, the idea that if we have an opportunity to do a larger project at rates that are comparable or affordable for Alaskans and supply a great deal of revenue for the state treasury, and more importantly, security for our citizens. I like that when I say that, I refer to not only our brethren out in rural Alaska, but Fairbanks, what it's going through now. We're intimately aware of what happens when we don't have a reliable energy source. And from a macroeconomic position, it is a problem that must be dealt with. The HOA is a roadmap to outline guiding principles and main issues to advance a natural gas project. AGDC represents the ability for us to share that data in a confidential manner with our friends and with TransCanada and with the producers in a way. As I've said last year when we were asking for this legislation, and it's their information, and it's important that it be protected. What we're different a little bit now is the work that we've progressed. We now own assets that are valuable to either project, and I think that's very compelling, and it puts the state in a good position. I testified numerous times that what AGDC and its enabling legislation last year did was it gave leverage to the state of Alaska to be a participant. I have always believed in an equity participation, reasoned, of course, thoughtful, fiscally responsible, that goes without saying. I hold that same principle when I was CEO of Alaska Housing Finance for many years, the idea of some skin in the game. That same principle holds true for home ownership as it does for ownership in projects. I just think it's so much more vital when people have an absolute vested interest in something. Now, that said, this is a major undertaking, and I would like to offer any support that I can for any of you down the line to help. It's a major decision. There's a lot of moving parts to this bill. AGDC itself is very limited in the bill. I think it's the first seven sections or something, but it's usually most of that language is statutes taken out of HB4 to enable to the new subsidiary or entity that's going to be created to carry forward. And the vast majority of the bill, of course, deals with taxes and gas ownership and royalty gas. I'd also like to remind people that we are compelled to deliver gas to Alaskans at the lowest possible cost, and we're also compelled to facilitate a larger project. And when we're asked to get involved in the alignment, it was exciting. It's taxed us quite a bit. I want to thank staff at AGDC. Everybody's pulling kind of in different directions. We've got our own project that we're moving forward, but we're also readily available for our colleagues here for meetings all over the country and sometimes quite lengthy meetings to try and come up with these agreements and to advance both projects. I truly believe that at some point, when all the stars are lined up properly, that a major project's going to go, and I think the state's put itself in a position to offer valuable resources to deliver towards that project. So I think we're heading in the right direction. I know that there's some confusion as to, I've been asked by several members as to the subsidiary that's being created. I know that there's some talks going around and some language that might straighten out some of that confusion. I have not yet seen that, but I'm looking forward to being involved at any date in the future. So I'll take any questions or let Mr. Palmer.
Thanks, Dan. Go ahead, Mr. Palmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tony Palmer. I'm Vice President, Major Projects Development for TransCanada. I'm also President of TransCanada's Alaska Interest. TransCanada supports the bill, and thanks you for this opportunity to speak to it in front of you. And in the interest of time, I will not go through the 40 years history that TransCanada has had to date, unsuccessful efforts to commercialize Alaskan gas. I think the gentlemen to my right have done an excellent job of describing that to you. But I would like to speak to why TransCanada is, and I personally am encouraged by what you have in front of you today, the HOA and the MOU to move this project forward. We think it is very significant that you have companies that after the anything from 30 to 40 years of initiative on this project in various efforts, they remain convinced that they can commercialize this gas. TransCanada feels the same way, and I'll try to be responsive to your question, Mr. Chairman. In order to have a successful project, any project of this scale needs two things. They must have permission broadly to construct that project, and secondly, they must have ultimate customers that are willing to purchase that natural gas, because LNG, much like natural gas sold in North America, is a fungible product. Alaskans' molecules are no different than molecules from other sources around the world. We must compete in the marketplace. But you have in front of you today, you have companies that do have that marketing skill and expertise and, quite frankly, experience. The three producers in front of you today certainly do that each and every day in the Asian markets today and have done that for decades. You heard from a number of the participants, some of them as early as the late 1960s. You also have an entity represented by Mr. Fosky, whose specific raison d'etre is to provide gas to Alaskans. That also is a critical function of this project. But to look to the bigger project to move gas across the ocean, you need companies that can manage the permitting stage. I think you have that in front of you today. Secondly, you must focus on the cost, everything from the cost estimation process as well as the ultimate construction cost to put this project in service and operate it beyond that. Thirdly, you need to look at quality. We've seen projects, and I'm sure others have as well, that were constructed, perhaps half constructed, and didn't perform well on a long-term basis. I think you can look at the group of parties in front of you today and have confidence that they're very concerned about achieving a high-quality project. And fourthly, can those companies achieve schedule? On a project of this scale, with this many years before you get into service, it is critical that you don't have delay, particularly during construction, because that actually is the area where costs tend to run up. Yes, you can have cost overruns when you purchase pipe or purchase various facilities, but what really runs up the cost is schedule. And I think you have a group of companies in front of you today that are familiar with that and knows how to project manage. And finally, do those parties have the credit to actually backstop a project of this scale? We're talking about a project somewhere in the $45 to $65 billion for any one company. That would be a bet the company initiative. That's not the case. You have a group of entities with you today, including the state of Alaska, that does have the credit to backstop these type of projects. And ultimately, those things drive you to probability of success in a project. You heard from my colleagues that there's no guarantee that this project will succeed, but we are highly encouraged when we look at the other components that I just described that this project does have a high-quality initiative to succeed in the marketplace. We will have to compete with other regions in North America, and we'll have to compete with other nationalities around the globe. But with those components in place, TransCanada is confident that this project can succeed, and that's why we're supportive of the bill and supportive of this initiative. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Questions? Senator Dunleavy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to make sure I capture this. If I didn't, please correct me, but I think when BP was giving the testimony, I captured, I think, a quote accurately. If once we go through the pre-feed and free feed, we determine if the project is profitable, we will proceed. Did I capture that correctly?
Senator Dunleavy, to the chair, I think that's an accurate statement. I'm not sure exactly what I might have said, but that rings true to me.
Captures the sentiments.
Yeah, it's part of the state. I'm sorry, Senator Dunleavy, to the chair. That's consistent with the way we typically advance mega projects with a staged gate decision-making process. That at each phase of the project, pre-feed, then feed, we make that assessment.
So if during this process, during feed, and I'm looking at some estimates for the state of Alaska, $43 to $108 million, let's say it's $108 million depending upon the stake, the investment. If during the feed process, it looks like it's a go for everybody, we then go to pre-feed. And then if we go to pre-feed, there's a range from $180 million to $450 million. Well, let's say we invest the $108 million in feed, the $450 in the pre-feed on the high end, and at that point, one of the partners, two of the partners, whoever, decide that this is not going to make it. Is it safe to assume that that $450 plus that $108 million that the state invested has been invested and it's gone at that point? There's no recovery of that money.
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, I think that determination would depend on the facts that existed at the time, because if at any point in the process one of the entities here that's advancing the project decides, for whatever reason, not to continue. The other parties are certainly free to continue advancing the project. And to the extent that BP still viewed the opportunity as attractive and commercially viable, we would certainly look at every way possible to continue advancing the project and make use of the investment that we had, because we also don't want to have capital lying fallow, and we would want to the extent we saw that the project was a good opportunity, we would press forward and continue.
So there's, through the chair, so there's off-ramps, we've been told, for the state of Alaska, but I'm assuming there's off-ramps for each of the partners as well.
Senator Dunleavy, through the chair, that's correct. At each of those, at pre-feed, going into pre-feed, going into then feed, making the final investment decision, or FID, each one of those is a key decision point where all the parties here would have to say yes to for all of us to continue into the next phase. If one of us says no, then the remaining parties are going to be left to see, okay, can we pick up the pieces and continue with the rest of us?
Okay. I'll probably get back to this. Thank you. Let me ask just one more to Mr. Fauske. What is the nature of your entity's role in this conversation now? Because you're pursuing an in-state gas line concept, yet you're having discussions with a larger export concept. How does that work?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. Confusing at first, but it's actually become quite beneficial in that. excuse me. Much of the work that we're doing aligns with future work that would go on with this next project. The sharing of data, the alignment, the various things that you have to go through, the environmental work. There's many things I know when I testified last year, we had assured legislators that we would do to the best of our ability not to duplicate and or waste people's money. In other words, as we align with folks and we're doing air quality standards in certain parts where generators might be, there's no reason for both entities or two or three entities, let's say in this case two entities, to set those facilities up, spending millions of dollars to test the same air molecules that have to be done under standards before you can continue your permitting process. So that type of work where you align, you line up, you join forces and try to keep the project moving forward. Eventually, in defense of, this is a large undertaking. Ours is a large undertaking in the sense of, and it's standalone at $7.5 to $8 billion. I always joke that only Alaskans would call an 800-mile, 36-inch pipe little. If that project were to go, it would be the largest project in North America. If this project goes, it'll be the largest project in the world, and that's substantial. And I feel comfortable that the parties have come together in a fashion where they're really serious about trying to move this forward. I can speak from my work on the smaller line. There's a lot of moving parts. I'm encouraged by the work that's going on, that people understand that. They're very professional. They're very good firms. They do this all over the world. They're some of the largest companies in the world. Now, back to how do we keep alignment? We keep with the mandate of HB4, as we are directed by the legislature, that we are to supply gas to Alaskans, that we are also to help facilitate the development and work with a larger diameter pipe, and I believe at some point out there you reach that point where you have aligned and one melds into the other. And most would assume, most probable would be the assumption that that our work would meld into what they're doing. It would be a valuable asset that the state of Alaska could bring to the table to help develop this project going forward. I think most people would agree that if it's possible, a larger line with a huge commercial application, selling a product out of our state, overseas, if you will, generating money for the revenue, security for its citizens is an ideal situation to be in. The smaller line was always intended. It can be a very successful commercial application in itself, but people are enticed by the fact that bigger is better. I'm trying. It gets difficult at times because you don't want to get balled up and rolled off into a corner because we don't know enough yet to do that. And so it's important for AGDC to keep moving forward with this mission. But I think down the road, in the fairly near future, it's going to be there's going to be a time when I do believe, if this is successful on all fronts, that our work would be melded into a larger project going forward, and that'd be an ideal situation. Does that help you, Senator?
A little bit.
Okay.
I have lots of questions.
This devil's in the detail. Cut me off when you feel free.
Well, I'm going to cut you off now only because we have 5 minutes left, and I see Senator Bishop and Senator Fairclough have questions. Okay. So we're going to be talking tomorrow as well, and I'm sure these gentlemen would come back if we asked them.
All right, thanks.
Senator Bishop.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Fauske, I know that you're going to do everything possible to make sure Alaskans get cheap gas as cheap as possible to our burner tips. Correct?
To the Chair, Senator Bishop, you are absolutely correct on that assessment.
Thanks.
Senator Fairclough?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have listened carefully with the words that we're using this evening, and there might be maybe I didn't pick it up in the Resource Committee, but the administration has proposed that Alaska can take our gas either in value or in kind, but I heard at least two of the three of you speak about Alaska taking its gas only in molecules. So if someone could speak to that, and I would say that the heads of agreement outlines in Alaska State Statute 3805-182A, it provides that royalties on oil and gas shall be taken in kind unless the commissioner determines that taking in money would be in the best interest of the state. But I've heard it said in molecules at this table tonight by two different folks. So can you talk to me about that? Would some come in dollars to the state, or are you proposing from your perspective as partners in the agreement that everything will be taken as gas?
Go ahead, Mr. Flood. You're it.
Through the chair. As it says in the heads of agreement, we think that the state participation is an absolutely important part of this taking this project forward. And to facilitate that state participation, essentially to cause that equity share and gas share to become aligned and to achieve the alignment that we've talked about, yes, indeed, the state taking its royalty as gas or in kind and tax as gas, we think is a very important element of what we are proposing today.
Senator Fairclough?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So taking the royalty in kind, which can be fixed at different numbers depending on the lease, does that mean the tax is in molecules also, or is the tax in value, or is that yet to be determined?
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, the tax would also be in molecules.
Senator Fairclough?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in the future, I'd like to see that modeled for total tax take as we move forward on that. We had an earlier conversation today that was very important to this committee regarding the pressurization in the pipe, which you talked about, that will be a future. It's yet to be determined the size of the pipe or the pressure that will be in the pipe. And so we were discussing the five offtakes for Alaskans' energy security. And depending on the pressure, as far as AGDC representation along reaching an agreement, there's going to be the cost of straddle plants depending on the pressure. And so I'm getting curious looks. We want to make sure we can get gas to Alaskans, and I want to know how much it costs to take the pipe off the line.
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, Dave Antile with BP. Perhaps I was one that might have given a curious look. In my understanding of industry parlance, a straddle plant is a fairly complex piece of kit involved to take a range of liquids and convert them to what we would refer to in gas business as NGLs, and they typically would have a chemical plant associated with a straddle plant. My understanding of the gas offtakes for moving gas in state would be a substantially simpler process for any conditioning downstream of the offtake point to make it suitable for a burner tip specification, not requiring something nearly as elaborate as a straddle plant. But there could be some conditioning because the heat content may be a bit higher than the typical burner tip spec, but those facilities are pretty routine items. And I know that Steve Butt, the project manager for the AKLNG project, has testified before this body, the legislature, not necessarily the Senate Finance Committee yet. And he or someone else that's maybe more expert in the project specifics might be able to provide further detail.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Faircliffe.
I only put that on the record because I want you to know that that was a discussion point earlier today, and certainly people at this table care about how much that costs and if the pressurization or the type of pipe that is utilized doesn't lend itself for those five offtake points. That will be an issue for future. I believe it will be an issue for future legislators as they take up that issue. I have two other points, and I really don't have time for them, so I'd like to put it on the record.
Yeah.
At what point will an export permit allow or hold up this project? So where in this pre-FEED or prior to FID do we secure an export permit, and how will that affect project delay, depending on that happens? And then the second one is, under Senator Stevens' term as our state's senator in Congress, we established dollars that were available for financing a pipeline, and I'm wondering the interplay between access of using that federal backing, how that will either advantage or disadvantage the project, and then I can ask my own revenue team about whether that reduces our cost of borrowing or if that's a somehow in play that we can use that to help support Alaska's position in the project. So, Mr. Chairman, I've got an LBNA committee meeting that I need to go to, but I thought those were worth getting on the record for.
All right. We'll run that down for you. And I think Senator Bishop, you have to go as well. Okay, Senator Miles. So I think we're done tonight. tomorrow we will have another meeting. I certainly appreciate your gentlemen coming here and touching bases with you, I'm sure, before the bill moves from committee. Senator Dunleavy, you had another question?
Just a reminder, I'm going to have a number of questions I'm going to need to follow up on tomorrow.
Okay. We're going to, I don't believe you're all here tomorrow. They're not here tomorrow, are they? No. Tomorrow it'll be Mr. Pulaski and Mr. Balash again. Not these gentlemen, no. We'll set up another time if it's possible to have you gentlemen come back. And so tomorrow we will be hearing from, as I said, Mr. Pulaski and Mr. Balash. And if you could, members of the committee, think of potentially some additional presentations you'd like, or submit some questions so that we can put together the right people to answer them as soon as possible before we actually get into the pieces and parts of the bill that may need improvement or amendment. So I'd appreciate that as well. I think I'm going to have, in this process, Mr. Teal come and talk to us about our own cash flows and our ability to participate in this and what we might need to do. Yes, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, for suggestions. I agree with Senator Dunleavy, but I think it'd be good to have these gentlemen come back again for additional questions.
Yeah. Okay. If you all can make it, then we'll do it.
Ma'am, Mr. Chairman, tomorrow? Is that or at any time? I couldn't hear
you. Are you going to be in town, Dan?
I am in town. So
are all of you going to be in town for a while? Tomorrow might just work, so We'll try to set that up for tomorrow.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just concerned about international travel for Mr. Palmer. If there are questions from him, it might be.
Thank you, Senator Faircloth, through the chair. Yes, I believe I could stay until just about noon tomorrow, but I have commitments that would require me to be back in Vancouver on Thursday morning, first thing.
Senator Bishop, did you have something?
I just thought he was Alaskan by now.
Senator Bishop, almost.
Before we go, just a brief at ease. You can all go. It's a brief at ease. Thank you.